Hello and welcome to Filling the Sink, a podcast from Catalan News. My name is Leah Bilaeva, and today we're talking about Catalonia's housing problems. In big cities around the world, finding affordable housing has become one of the biggest problems, and Catalonia and Spain are unfortunately no different. To combat the problem, in March of this year, the Spanish government introduced a reference index for rent prices to keep the prices from rising uncontrollably. Although the idea has broadly been welcomed, it turns out that the new rent cap has created loopholes and has had the opposite effect of price increases on short-term leases, while long-term housing has gotten increasingly more difficult to find. As a response, the Catalan government rushed through new regulations to, in their words, find a way to close the loopholes. But they failed to garner support to make it a permanent law. So are we back to square one? On today's podcast, we will explain what the housing laws are all about, and more importantly, the large gap there is between the law and the reality of the market. I'm joined today by Kilian Shields and Ona van Dijk. Hi to you both.
Hello, hello.
Hey, Leah.
Welcome. I'm excited about this topic. It's kind of complicated, but I think we're going to make it work.
Yeah.
We've been deep into the whole topic now for the past couple of weeks, a very deep whole subject, and a lot to delve into.
Well, let's do just that. So I just mentioned before that the Spanish reference index for rent prices came into effect in March of this year. What is all of this about, and what was the purpose of the law?
Effectively, it was to control rent increases in what's being termed as tense housing markets. It's been up to the various autonomous communities to decide whether or not they want to apply this law, because this came from the Spanish government. And it was also up to the regions to decide which municipalities counted as tense housing markets. Catalonia has been the only territory in all of Spain to go ahead and apply this law. And in Catalonia, a total of 271 towns and cities covering an area where around 90% of residents of Catalonia live, they have been declared tense housing markets. It's going to be valid for 3 years with a rent cap in place of a maximum of 3% increase yearly.
All right. And then in addition to that, this is only for big property owners, right?
Yeah, exactly. So this only applies to those large-scale property owners who have five or more properties in their portfolio, which obviously that won't count the opposite of that. The more typical thing that you see here of like families having a home in from their parents or grandparents, they are essentially exempt from this.
Mm-hmm. But let me ask you, what happened with the housing market after the Spanish law came into effect?
Well, we've kind of been seeing something of an unintended consequence, I suppose you could say. And that's sort of a bit of a theme of this whole podcast. We're sort of exploring that gap in between the law and the reality of what's happening on the ground. And this is exactly one of those circumstances that we're seeing this. So the law only applies to long-term rentals, more than 1 year. It does not apply to short-term rentals, which is defined between 1 and 11 months. So what's been happening, basically, on the rental market, the offering is generally shifting from owners are taking their properties off the market for long-term rentals, where the price would be contained by this new law, and then instead offering it only for short-term rentals, where they can increase it to whatever they want. Basically, that's not contained by any law. Anecdotally, we all know a couple of friends or even work colleagues who are having a really difficult time trying to find a new place to live right now. And we've even got some numbers to back this up as well. The platform Idealista, the rental platform that's very common here in Barcelona, Catalonia and Spain, they've published some numbers in some of their studies. They've said that in Barcelona alone, 30% of the properties available are seasonal rentals. This is up 53% since last year. In Lleida, that figure rises to 650% compared to last year over in Western Catalonia. Kind of incredible. At the same time, there's also been a fall in the offer of permanent rentals. So this study, it's only used weekly metrics. It's not completely foolproof, but it's kind of one of the only sources of figures that we have in this. But Idealista have seen a 13% fall in the permanent rental supply across Catalonia over the past couple of weeks since this law has come into effect in March. So yeah, we're seeing that very clear trend. Property owners are moving away from the permanent rental offering and offering more towards seasonal rentals, short-term rentals.
Mm-hmm. And this problem, the Catalan government tried to solve by approving, well, different rent cap laws. One that came into place in 2020, but then it got annulled by the Spanish Constitutional Court for overreach. Tell me about that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is everything that we're speaking about today. This Spanish government law that came into effect in March, this Catalan government decree law that was built on top of that. This is all built on the work that has come within the years beforehand. So we can look at a previous law that's no longer in effect. It's from Catalonia, from 2020. And this was kind of a milestone, really, in this whole area. This law affected municipalities where rent prices increased above the Catalan average, where rent surpassed 30% of a household's average income, and where rent prices have surpassed the inflation rate by at least 3% in the 5 years prior. So this was kind of the first thing in Catalonia that we had that was something of a rent cap. The Sindicat de Lloguer, the tenants' union, really celebrated this law. But like you mentioned, it only lasted about a year, year and a half before the Constitutional Court overruled it, saying that Catalonia was effectively overstepping their competency.
All right, and this year the Catalan government approved a decree that was built on top of the previous law, but in the end it failed to get majority in the parliament. So let's talk a little bit about that. What was the original intent of this Catalan decree? And where does this situation leave the Catalan renters now?
So the original intent was to cover up some of the loopholes that were found in the Spanish law. Like we mentioned earlier on, that sort of distance between the law and the reality on the ground, how it's actually affecting people. So this decree law was actually aimed at helping those situations. It extended the Spanish government's rent cap law to situations of short-term rentals if the person is renting for reasons of studying or for work or for health reasons, or if they were waiting for a house to be built. So it really kind of expanded the scope of who it can apply to. Esther Capella, the up-to-now territory minister in the Catalan government, she explained at the time that the law was published that it was to avoid fraudulent use of temporary rents, and quote, which have become the norm across Catalonia after the rent cap law was introduced. And so for this law, the only exceptions would be seasonal rentals for holidays. This law also brought in the scope for fines, for sanctions, for owners who break the law, effectively, with fines potentially up to 90,000 euros. So quite significant, really. However, all of this is in the bin now, effectively, because this was a decree law, which I mentioned, which that means that the Catalan executive can pass it if it's urgent, if it's necessary, and they decided that it was. But this means that the law comes into force temporarily, and then the executive has 1 month to ratify it, which just this week it came before lawmakers to approve or deny it, and in the end it has been rejected. So this whole Catalan decree law that we're just describing is now actually no longer in force. It was the case for a month, and now the only thing that's controlling rent prices in Catalonia is the Spanish law originally, which is still full of all the loopholes that we've spent all this time describing.
The decree law was actually pushed by the minority government of Esquerra, and it was supported by left-wing CUP and Comuns. But the neoliberal parties, Junts, Vox, Ciutadans and People's Party, they voted against it. And the Socialist Party actually abstained. And also the Socialists and Junts actually said that the law wasn't made in dialogue with the people affected by the current rental laws, and that's why they are against it.
Okay, and I would actually like to ask you a broader question. Why is there a need for these laws just in general?
Well, because the rent keeps increasing. So the average rent prices have actually increased 80% in Catalonia's biggest cities over the last 10 years. So, for example, in Barcelona, the average rent was 688 euros in 2014. But 8 years later, in 2022, you had to pay 1,026 euros on average for rent. So that's a massive increase. And other cities where this is also very visible are Lleida, Tarragona and Girona. And also Catalonia is currently the third autonomous community in Spain where people spend the most amount of money on rent in comparison to their salary. So people are spending around 58% on rent.
Okay, so there's a huge need for this type of law. And I can imagine also that there have been different reactions to these laws, both in favor and against.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Like we mentioned them earlier on, the tenants' union, they've been working for years to try and tackle this issue. But of course, we've also spoken this week with some rental agencies who are more free market thinking, who are less in favor of interference within markets. And they obviously see things quite differently, we could say.
Okay, well, let's hear what they said.
Real estate agency Casamona mostly rents to foreigners who are coming to Barcelona looking for short-term rentals. With the current changes in laws, there is a lot of uncertainty, causing people to turn to the likes of Airbnb, which brings its own risks, according to Casamona founder and CEO Tina Mathiasen.
On Airbnb, you don't have to say if you're on vacation, there's no rent control, there's nothing. The people coming to here could be doctors, could be professors, they could be students, they cannot find anything, so they have to go on Airbnb. And who is getting these money? Airbnb is really happy right now.
Short-term rentals not being included in rent control caused a shift of supply away from the main market, according to Carme Arcarazo, a representative from the tenants' union. Short-term rentals are targeted towards a different market, uses that are not people's main housing, but
some people from Barcelona that actually live here end up having to take these like bullshit contracts, and it basically creates more insecurity.
There are no mechanisms provided by the law to ensure compliance, something the tenants' union criticizes, while they also encourage people to defend their rights.
The tenants need to like also empower themselves using the law. It has taken so much effort to get these laws that now it's not only feeling satisfied that we have them, but like we know that landlords will try to break them, and we need to like defend the new rights that we have.
Tina thinks small-scale owners will be unjustly punished by the law, but believes there is some merit to a version of the law that focuses on large-scale property owners who make their business from renting.
I get that if you have an owner who has 40 apartments, and I get that then you can't get a place to live and you need... So I think that to have a rental cap somehow for long, long term, I understand that.
In comparison, for Carme, it doesn't matter between small or large-scale property owners. The union doesn't understand landlords who prefer new tenants every few months.
A landlord, in theory, what they would want is stability. Like a tenant that always pays, that stays there for a long time, that takes care of the apartment. And I think rent control actually guarantees that.
Some say the Spanish rental law is flawed and causes other issues because of loopholes. But the union looks at it a different way.
What you have to do is cover up the loophole and regulate that segment of the market that is not regulated.
Social housing could be a key part to the solution, Carme believes.
We need to decommodify housing. And if 98% of the market is in private hands, we also need to control this segment of the market so that it actually has a social purpose and not just a speculative purpose.
Thanks to Tina and Carme for speaking with us. I think that one thing that we must talk about when we talk about housing in Catalonia and in Barcelona is Airbnb. So will people now rent out their places more on Airbnb?
Well, in Barcelona, they've really been trying to control it. You need a tourist license to legally run an Airbnb, and the city council is not easy about giving those right now. I've even heard that in the last like few years, there have been barely any given out. So you can't really start an Airbnb at the moment, at least not legally. So there are a lot of illegal Airbnbs in the city because of it. And also the tourist license is actually the perfect loophole to escape all of the rental laws, because only if you have it, you can rent out your apartment, house, room, whatever, even your boat for less than 32 days, which you can't do without a license. So I would say that more people might start renting out their places on Airbnb with the new rental laws, but it will definitely not always be legal.
I mean, yeah, this is, I think, once again, the theme of this podcast, I think, you know, that distance between the law and the reality.
But the city is like doing their best to deal with these illegal Airbnbs. They have a detection tool online where you can look up the address of an Airbnb and see whether it's registered and it has a license. So if you think your neighbor might be running an illegal Airbnb, you can fill in a form and then the city will go investigate it. And if they are caught, the fines are very high. So they're really working on it, and they even say they've reduced the amount of illegal tourist apartments quite a lot in these last 8 years.
All right, so this law is only applicable to large-scale owners, which means those who own 5 or more properties. But who are these owners or these landlords?
So currently we don't actually know exactly, but what we do know is that CaixaBank and Sareb, Spain's bad bank, are the two biggest private large-scale owners. But in general, like if you go and rent something, you wouldn't be able to know whether you're renting from a large-scale owner. Except there's one way to actually find out at the registry, which isn't convenient because you're paying for the information. But the Housing Act currently does not provide any consultation tools on this and doesn't require this information to be put in advertisements or contracts. So your landlord could be a large-scale property owner and still raise the price above the rent cap without you knowing that it's illegal. So that's just another loophole, basically.
So it's a loophole that the Catalan law was trying to close by stating that in the contracts, the owners had to put in, well, who they were.
Yeah, the Catalan law that isn't in effect anymore.
And that's not included in the Spanish law. So it's now not obligatory for owners to specify whether or not they are large-scale property owners.
Okay, so all of this, it sounds like the responsibility of many, many things is on the renters. Is that actually the case?
I mean, basically, yeah. I mean, neither of the laws kind of provided any tools for inspecting if the laws are being complied with, essentially. So you've just got it down to the responsibility falls onto the renter to, if they discover that their landlord is breaking the law in any which way, it's entirely up to them to bring them to court about it. Just so many gaps, really, unfortunately, that are making people fall into just difficult situations time and time again.
I mean, I think that's something that we have heard so much from so many different people. And in fact, Ona, you dove deep into the online forums to find out all of these horror stories from renters. So let's hear what you found out.
Offline and online, people voice their opinions and share their stories with housing in Barcelona, like on Reddit, where there are hundreds of people commenting on the issues they faced.
I make a pretty good salary for Spain and was initially rejected for most places in the range of 1,000, 1,200 euros per month. And I'm 36 and a highly skilled professional, and I want my own apartment. Being told the solutions living like I'm in university is depressing.
I had to go back to my parents because I wasn't going to waste my whole salary on a shared apartment. The situation is a mess and I feel bad for people who have no other choice.
We used to pay 1,350 for a 2-bedroom apartment and now they're renting each room for 1,100 euros.
While most talk about the financial burden, some also share the loopholes landlords and agencies use to avoid the new rental laws. If an apartment is being rented for more than a year, landlords have to pay all real estate agency fees, but the reality is different.
We contacted an unfurnished apartment just to find out they were renting it long term, but they require to sign a temporary contract just so they can avoid the law and make us pay the broker's fee as well.
Some people are also being kicked out of their apartments and given ultimatums.
I received a message telling me that either my rent will be doubled or I have to leave the flat. The owner of my flat owns the building and has 28 flats here. This will not be solved with laws or social conscience.
Finding an apartment in the city is described as if you're joining the Hunger Games with thousands of other people.
I've been looking for 2 months now. When I go visit a potential place, I find out that they do mass visits. They tell people to come as soon as possible and there are like 30 visitors every day.
They know the demand is far superior to the supply, so they come up with all sorts of ultra-specific conditions, like no visitors, you must not be working from home, no pets.
For many, the agencies and landlords are the problem.
The local landlords are the ones forcing people out of the city by actively ending contracts and raising rents. They have tenants who are stable and can pay the rent. They make zero improvements to the property, but decide that suddenly it's worth 300 euros a month more than it was yesterday. That is their choice.
Thank you, Ona, for your reporting. So let me ask you, after talking about all of these problems. Are there any solutions?
I mean, social housing is one thing that could go a long way into helping this situation. Barcelona, Catalonia, Spain is actually far behind the European average for the social housing stock. So this is something that could go a long way if we, instead of continuing to commodify something that's so vital for life, housing, having a place to live, take at least a bit more of a significant portion of the offering out of the private market. Just a basic offering of housing there that doesn't get overly influenced by this, which clearly we're seeing is causing a lot of people to struggle.
For sure. And it's actually the thing with social housing. It's something that we talked about a couple of months ago on Filling the Sink. So if you want to learn more about the social housing situation, go back to one of our previous episodes.
Social housing is obviously like a really big problem because every political party mentioned it in their pre-election campaigns for the last Catalan elections.
I think it was the Conservative People's Party. They outlined the need to build 50,000 social housing homes, I believe the number
was. For young people.
For young people specifically, yeah. So this is not a thing that's limited to right or left of the political spectrum. It's a unifying idea.
What I think is also quite important is that the laws that are being made should be coherent with the actual situation on the ground, so for the public. And there should also be some mechanisms to make sure the law is actually enforced, because just having the law on paper doesn't do anything.
That's what we have seen. Well, it's time now for the Catalan phrase of the week. What is it this time, Mona?
Well, this time it's actually you need two people for this one. So, Killian, if you can help.
Well, if you're in a situation and you're going to ask like, okay, so what's next? What do we do? In Catalan, you'd say, ¿qué hem de fer?
And then you answer, vendre la casa y anar de lloguer, which means sell the house and go rent something. And it's just like a random phrase that's used if someone asks you a stupid question about what are we going to do? Or whatever, it's just a jokey phrase, but it fits.
All right, okay. ¿Qué hem de fer? Vendre la casa y anar de lloguer. And that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. Please do subscribe to Filling the Sink wherever you get your podcast, if you haven't already. Thanks again to Tina Matias and Karma Arcarazo for speaking with us. Thanks to you, Ona, and to you, Killian, for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And we'll be back again next Saturday with another episode of Filling the Sink about the Catalan Snail Festival in Lleida. On behalf of the team here at Catalan News, I'm Leah Bellaiva, wishing you a great weekend. Fins aviat. Adeu.